This is Digital Story Podcast number 985, February 4th, 2025. Today's theme is Getting Ready for Spring Adventure. I'm Derek Story. The off-season is a great time to prepare for sunnier days ahead. We can take inventory of our gear, shore up gaps, test new equipment, and start making reservations for upcoming adventures. This week, we take a look at how to get the most out of your off-season as you daydream about spring and summer. All of this and more on today's TVS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. During my college days in Southern California, I ran a residential gardening business. I had an avocado green Ford Courier pickup truck, a red snapper lawnmower, a power edger, a weed eater, hedge clippers, and lots of hand tools. The flexibility of owning my own business fit perfectly with my changing course schedule from semester to semester. I typically spent all day on campus 3 days a week, mowed yards the other 3 days, and took Sundays off. I graduated with a BA in English and a minor in design with zero debt. The winters in SoCal were typically mild, so I had plenty of time to prune back bushes, overseed lawns, and clean up leaves. When a storm did blow into town, I used the time to work on my equipment. I would sharpen mower blades, perform tune-ups, repair loose handles, reorganize the garage, and shop for replacement items. I loved those days. I'd have the garage door open with the rain falling outside while I listened to music and worked on my equipment. By the time spring rolled around, my garage was completely shipshape and everything was ready to tackle a new growing season. I found myself reminiscing about those days recently when a storm blew into Northern California where I live now. I had the boot hatch up on the VW ID4, reorganizing the back compartment as I prepared for upcoming scouting and camping trips. In addition to last year's upgrades, the Tent Box Go rooftop tent, Bodega mini fridge, and Jackery power stations, I'm configuring a second sleeping area inside with the HeliBox car camping platform, new camp chairs, and a bigger Bodega cooler for longer trips. While the rain pours outside, I'm testing this gear in the garage, these days with AirPods in my ears instead of a boombox on the shelf. I want to maximize storage capacity inside the VW, test the different mattress pads, determining the best compromise between comfort and portability, and make sure I can access everything quickly when I arrive in camp late at night, dead tired. My camera gear is a key player in this jigsaw puzzle. After a successful nimble trip to Costa Rica, I found a sweet spot between capacity and capability. I can pack what I need in my 18.5-liter Lowepro Trekker Lite 150 AW backpack that slides under the HeliBox platform and out of sight. Just like my days in Southern California running my gardening business, I love the off-season for my photography workshops and adventures. Before I know it, I'll be scouting locations up in Klamath for our spring photography event, and I guarantee you, I will be prepared. Yeah, it's funny how the rain pouring outside and you have the garage door open and you know you're working on stuff inside the garage. That's like a powerful memory for me because of all those years. I ran my gardening business, my little gardening business, for 7 years. I kept doing it on weekends, even after I got my first full-time job out of college, because as most of you know, that first job out of college usually doesn't pay very much while you're paying your dues. And that certainly was the case for me. And I had some favorite clients that I really liked, and they were all kind of grouped together in an area there. So I would, on Saturdays, just park my truck and do 6 or 7 yards and make a little extra money so that I could make ends meet. But it was really interesting, the rhythm of those years when I was gardening. You know, you have the seasons at play, of course, you know, fall when all the leaves are falling, you know, that is a whole different kind of day than midsummer when you have to be out there early working because it gets so hot during the day. And then winter, when it's hit or miss, some days you're out there pruning and overseeding, and other days you're in the garage fixing stuff. And as I was working in the garage this last weekend with the hatch open on the VW, getting things configured and really figuring out a whole new setup for the coming year, it just made me think about those days when I was a gardener and going to school, and how much I loved rainy days. they were really cool. Now, you couldn't have too many of them, or suddenly you were in rice and beans mode, but the right amount sprinkled in certainly provided, you know, a little variety to the season, and, you know, it was nice. Very, very chill days. You may be wondering, when I'm talking about adding this sort of second bedroom, I mean, we're talking about an SUV here, right? The VW ID.4. That's an SUV. It's not a recreational vehicle. It's not a trailer. But I do have the one bedroom on top now with the rooftop tent. And even though technically it can sleep two, it's really a one-person space when this person happens to be someone my size. You know, it's just being able to stretch out completely. Roll around in the middle of the night. I mean, it's so comfortable because, as I've talked about before, the rooftop tent is basically a trampoline base, very tight, but a trampoline base with a foam air mattress on top of it. So it's super comfortable. I mean, I sleep really well in that. But I was thinking, if someone wanted to join me, or for instance, if I was doing like an open camp with my family and someone wanted to stay over, it'd be nice to have a second spot. Or if I wanted to take off quickly and not have the rooftop tent on top and have something that worked inside. Now, when I first got the ID.4, I did sleep inside, but I never quite got it exactly the way that I wanted. In part, you know, when you fold down the back seat, it doesn't fold perfectly flat. You know, so there's that. And then I never really figured out the footwell. You know, when you move the front seat up on the passenger side, you have that big space and you want to use that space for sleeping, but you need to have something there for the sleeping pad to go on top of. And I never quite got that dialed in either. So I never had the sort of comfortable nights sleeping inside that I've had sleeping on top with the rooftop tent. And I thought, well, you know, maybe that's just the way it is. And then these guys that came up with HeleBox, and that's H-E-L-E box, camping platform, they solved the problem. It's super light. It folds down very compact, but they have legs that extend to different heights. And so I think there are six legs at the base or at the back end of the car where it is very flat. You know, you have the legs they're in shorter mode, and then where there's that little angle, because the seat doesn't fold down perfectly flat, then you adjust those legs so that they're flat with the legs in the back. And then it has long legs that go in the footwell up front that extend. All of these are independently adjustable, and then you can make a flat surface, which I never really had before. And then it's up just a little bit, so the case that the HeliBox comes in, well, it's emptied out, right, because you have the bed set up. Well, then that case slides underneath it, and you have it for storage, and it actually is divided into three compartments. So then you use the storage underneath the platform, right, so you're not really losing any space by having your bed set up in the back. Now, you have to put your own mattress on top. And, you know, that's what I'm testing, because I have different thicknesses of mattresses. And I want to get one that's a nice compromise between taking up space, still being comfortable. But I have the screens for the windows, and I have everything else I need inside to be comfortable. Worked all that out before. So now it's just a matter of getting the sleeping surface and at the same time not losing storage space while doing it. So these guys really, you know, came up with something slick. And what it allows me to do is basically have a second bedroom in, you know, inside the car while I sleep on top. Or if I don't want to have, like I said, if I don't want to put the rooftop on, I can just travel even lighter with just this inside. So I'm going to do a dry run on this coming up pretty soon. I'm looking forward to it because I think it's going to be a lot of fun having the option to sleep luxuriously on top or Spartan inside, but still, you know, relatively comfortable. And then, of course, my camera gear and all my other camping gear will work with this setup. I had to change my chairs. You know how camping chairs get after a while, and these were old. I got new chairs that fold down much smaller, and they'll also fit under the sleeping platform. As I mentioned, my camera bag will as well. So this is going to be a lot of fun, and the first big trip with it, I got some smaller overnights to test the setup, dry runs, but my first big trip will be later on in April when I go scouting for our Klamath Northern Redwoods workshop. And I'll be out there 3 days scouting, picking out all the locations that we're going to go shoot and everything. And I'll be camping the whole time I'm doing that. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And I'll probably bring both the rooftop and the heli box on this trip and test everything out. Oh, I can't wait. Right now it's raining outside. So I'm doing the rainy day thing, kind of ordering the things that I need, testing everything, figuring out how to be as efficient as possible. But I'm going to be able to travel really light, sleep not just one now, but be able to sleep two completely separate compartments. So winter definitely has its benefits. One of them is reconfiguring your equipment, fantasizing about spring and summer on the way, and just sort of enjoying the moment. The 7 Best Cameras for Travel in 2025. And this is an article published on DP Review. I have a link in the show notes. I thought these were interesting choices, and I'll read you their opening paragraph here, and then we'll go over the cameras that they're talking about. Travel can expose your once-in-a-lifetime sights and experience, and a good camera can be the perfect way to preserve those memories. We've looked at a range of models that offer great image quality, good autofocus, and excellent video, so you'll be prepared to capture whatever you run into. We've also tried to select relatively small cameras so they don't interfere with your trip, though it's worth touching briefly on lens size. If you choose a system with a 4/3 or APS-C sensor, you'll be able to use those lenses that are lighter and more compact than their full-frame counterparts. Full-frame sensors, however, offer the potential for even better image quality, so it's worth considering whether portability or image quality matters most to you and doing some research on what types of lenses you'd like to use and how big the full-frame versions are. Well, we have been thinking a lot about those. Those are the issues right at the core. Here we go. Let's name their, what do we have here? 7 cameras that they're naming here. The first one is a full-frame Sony A7CR, and it is a nice compact body. It's a good-looking compact body. 61 megapixel BSI CMOS sensor, 4K 60p video, dedicated AI processor for the AF system. So that is a compact camera that has a lot of features built into it, and definitely a lot of megapixels. So the Sony A7CR. Next on their list, the all-around compact capability, and they picked the Sony A6700. Again, a nice little compact camera with a 26 megapixel sensor, 4K 60p video, and a fully articulating screen. And I love those articulating screens, I really do. I love having those high angles, low angles, all that stuff that keeps me from shooting at the same perspective all the time. This camera sells for roughly $1,400. Next camera on the list, the Great Travel Kit, the Fuji X-T50 with 16 to 50 millimeter f/2.8 to 4.8 lens. You get a 40 megapixel APS-C BSI CMOS sensor, in-body image stabilization rated to 7 EV, and 6.2K 10-bit video recording. And that sells for $1,399 for that APS-C kit. And then they have the truly compact mirrorless, the OM System OM5, 20 megapixel 4/3 CMOS sensor, 4K 30p video, in-body stabilization rated to 6.5 EV, 7.5 with some lenses. And that's $1,299 with the 12 to 45 f/4.0. Now, one thing I will say that I do like the OM5, but honestly, why not just go with the OM1? You don't even have to get the OM1 Mark II. You could just get the regular OM1, which I'm sure you could get a good price on. It's going to be more than $1,299 with the lens, but it's a lot more camera. So anyway, that's one where I probably do a little tweak on the Micro Four Thirds selection there. The stylish travel companion, the Nikon ZF, 24 megapixel full frame BSI CMOS sensor, full width 4K 30 video, cropped 4K 60 video, stabilization rated to 8 EV. It and the OM1 are two cameras that I, you know, just think so highly of. And I really have to debate sometimes which ones I'm going to take where, but it does come down, as they said at the top of the article, does come down to what lenses I need. If I need more reach at a little faster aperture, the Micro Four Thirds seem to work better that way. If it's more general travel photography where I may run into more low light situations, then I kind of lean towards the Nikon. And then sometimes you just want to shoot with one camera or the other. So anyway, I'm glad to see it on the list with the OM System camera. Best pocketable travel camera, they have the Ricoh GR3. And this is a camera that we all love. So pocketable, so powerful. Good 24 megapixel APS-C sensor, 28 millimeter equivalent f/2.8 lens. And they do include Wi-Fi and Bluetooth with this camera. Of course, you're working with a fixed focal length lens on this, so that's one thing to keep in mind during your travels. The classic choice, the Fujifilm X100 6, 40 megapixel BSI CMOS APS-C X-Trans sensor, 35 millimeter equivalent f/2 lens, and a hybrid viewfinder. That hybrid viewfinder is wonderful because you can switch between EVF and optical, and both are fantastic. And one thing I will say about this, the Fujifilm X100 series, any of them, is that the screw-in 28 millimeter lens is fantastic if you don't mind carrying an extra piece of glass, and it gives you on the wide end. And then you can do their digital teleconverter that's built into the camera to give you 50 or 70 millimeters. And at 50 millimeters, it's really excellent. At 70 millimeters, at higher magnifications, you can see a little bit of deterioration. But at 50 millimeters, it's fantastic. So you can have a very compact package, 28 millimeter, 35 millimeter, and 50 millimeter with just one additional lens. And also, because it's a 40 megapixel sensor, you do have a little cropping room too, and that can help get you a little closer to your subject. And of course, they're just beautiful cameras. They're selling right now for about $1,600, depending on where you find them. So that's our lineup, and I thought that was a very kind of interesting and creative lineup for travel cameras, a little something for everyone. The two Sonys, couple Fuji films, the Nikon ZF, the OM System camera. You know, they're all great shooters. Fun to pack in your bag, and as we've been talking about this whole podcast, hit the road with. Canon recommits to compact cameras, will up production to meet demand. and this is on Petapixel, and I have the link in the show notes. Alongside releasing its financial results today, Canon also delivered a detailed presentation where additional information was shared, including details about camera sales and market trends. Canon's presentation also touches on compact cameras, a topic avoided in its other new financial result documents. Additionally, due to the spread of SNS, social network, the popularity of compact cameras that can easily capture images that differ from those of smartphones is growing among young people, Canon explains, echoing sentiments that have been repeatedly seen in broad market trends. As a result, we are seeing a buildup of orders, mainly for higher price models like the PowerShot G7X Mark III. We aim to expand overall camera sales by 8.4% through increased production and supply. The promise of increased production lines up with reports earlier this month that Canon was considering outsourcing manufacturing to cut costs, particularly regarding compact camera manufacturing. It's also interesting to note the mention of the G7X Mark III in particular, as it is not only old, difficult to track down due to limited supply, but also relatively expensive compact camera with an MSRP of $799. As far as Canon PowerShot cameras go, the G7X III is relatively high-end, has a 20-megapixel Type 1 stacked image sensor, 24-100 equivalent 1.8-2.8 lens, Canon's once high-end Digic 8 processor. The camera was rather impressive at its release. If Canon wanted to return to this well of semi-premium compact camera, it certainly has the technology to do so. Although some users may be seeking the cheapest possible camera to chase some sort of nostalgia, many photographers, new and veteran alike, are clamoring for more options when it comes to high-end compact and all-in-one camera market. People are calling. It's up to Canon whether or not it will pick up. This is sort of a interesting and slightly frustrating report in the sense that they're not talking about developing anything new, and I guess they probably wouldn't talk about that per se. But, you know, we're talking about just making more G7Xs, which, okay, great. I guess if you really wanted a G7X, you could find one somewhere. The bottom line on this is that, well, Canon is hearing what people are saying, but as of right now, they're not willing to talk about anything new or substantial to fill that need, just making more of what they already have. Speaking of Canon, they just replaced its best ever 13-inch A3 Plus printer. This is an article on Digital Camera World, and I have a link in the show notes. Canon has launched a new A3 Plus 13-inch printer in its professional-grade Image ProGraph Pro series. The Image ProGraph Pro 310 replaces the excellent Pro 300 and fits between the existing Pro 200S and Pro 1100 in the range. The Pro 310 is designed to be as compact as possible for an A3 Plus design, measuring 639 by 379 by 200 millimeters with trays closed, but still offers premium grade print quality. 10 individual Lucid Pro 2 pigment ink cartridges ensure rich, smoothly graduated colors, while a special matte black ink is present to improve monochrome output on fine art paper. There's also a chroma optimizer cartridge to give printed output a softer sheen, ideal when producing gallery quality artwork, with Canon claiming prints could last up to 200 years without being degraded by light. The Canon Image ProGraph Pro 310 is available to buy now from B&H, priced at $849. I just want to mention or reiterate that this is a pigment printer. So this is a serious fine art printer. You know, there's both dye-based and pigment-based inks. The dye-based inks are fantastic, but the pigment-based inks have a longer archive life if the print is, you know, treated well and, you know, not put in front of a window with blaring light every day. So at any rate, and it's a nice-looking printer. I'm looking at pictures of this here. The 310, the Pro 310, is available right now, and it sounds like it's a real winner. Our final news item today. This is from Lenz Reynolds, and of course I have a link to it. 5 photo and video innovations to look forward to in 2025. I'm not going to read too much of it here. You can do that because I do have the link in the show notes. But I just want to mention some of the things that they're talking about. Third-party lens development. Many camera manufacturers have left third-party lens companies like Sigma and Tamron behind with the transition to mirrorless cameras. However, 2024 brought announcements by both companies regarding developing RF-mounted lenses. We can expect to see these developments to continue as they get more lens options and affordable options to these mirrorless platforms, helping Canon and Nikon round out their lens lineup and leaving adapters in the past. One can only hope that some third-party manufacturers start developing lenses for the Fuji GF system as well. So they're excited. They think that third-party lens development is going to pick up in 2025. Another thing they mentioned, AI tools in retouching. In the past, I've discussed AI retouching on this blog and how it can help with your retouching process. I'm not interested in AI that can create art by text prompt or AI that can write a generic thesis for you. However, I am interested in AI which can speed up my workflow and help me work more efficiently. In the past, I've talked about Retouch 4.me's series of tools and Adobe's generative AI tools built within Photoshop. Both work exceptionally well, and many AI tools are at the forefront with broad appeal regarding retouching. And then he goes on to talk about more of that and feels that we're going to see more of that in 2025, and I tend to agree with that. This is an interesting one, this next one. Actual working lens profiles. We may need to talk about lens profiles if we continue that conversation, but if you've used Photoshop, Capture One, or Lightroom, you've likely seen that they have a long series of lens profiles that are designed to fix common issues with those particular lenses. The job of these profiles is to correct chromatic aberrations, barrel distortions, and vignetting that you might see common with specific lens or focal length. However, in use, results generally vary. If there's one thing LensRental.com knows more than most, is that two lenses are never the same. So I'm realistic in my expectations about how lens profiles function. Still, with all this new AI technology, I hope to see these lens profiles being updated and have purposeful use when trying to batch correct various problems you might run into when using specific lenses. A way where software learns the particular quirks of your lens and auto-corrects those problems when needed would also have significant use case. That's interesting, isn't it? Having software that learns how to correct your particular lens. I find that fascinating. So anyway, and there's a lot more in this article. If you're interested on people who work with cameras and lenses all the time, what they're seeing for 2025, you can take a look at this article on lensrentals.com. All right, stick here, a little virtual camera club business. I want to give a shout out to our inner circle members, the folks that support this podcast month in and month out. You guys turned out in force for our upcoming Being a More Creative Photographer online workshop that actually starts this Wednesday. We sold out. We just sold out a couple days ago. We've got a full crew, and it's packed full of Inner Circle members, and I absolutely love that. And they all, of course, got a discount because of their Inner Circle membership. Just one of the many ways that we like to treat our Inner Circle members, because they help sustain us, and we are so thankful for that. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, just go to the Patreon tile that's on any page of the Digital Story. Click on it, nose around a bit, and you can sign up there. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this community. Also want to give a nod to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. I'm going to hit Drew up and ask him what he thinks of this new Canon 310. It sounds like a pretty exciting printer. The fact that we can get a top quality pigment based printer that can print fine art stuff. If I ever wanted to do a show, you know, if I ever wanted to print a show, then I would certainly invest in a pigment-based printer and do my own work that way. Drew and company will be covering that printer. I'm sure they'll have a review on it very soon. And that's what I love, you know, having a resource that covers all the different hardware that's out there, the printing techniques, all the stuff that we need to know to make the best investment, both in paper, ink, projects, and printers. Red River Paper has a tile on all the pages of the digital story. You can click on it, go to our landing page, start nosing around, and find the information that you need for your inkjet printing. And a big thanks to them for sponsoring this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Might be reviewing a brand new camera, who knows? So make sure you come by. Until then, stay safe, keep taking pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.